Our intuition about the future is linear, but the reality of information technology is exponential, and that makes a profound difference. If I take 30 steps linearly, I get to 30. If I take 30 steps exponentially, I get to a billion. Now, there have been a number of people getting on the technological singularity bandwagon recently. If you are someone like me who has been considering the idea for more than 20 years now, it has been interesting to see the nature of the conversation about this matter change slowly over time. Once, people used to argue about if the singularity would happen. To many, when first introduced to the concept years ago, it seemed outlandish. The singularity was a kind of myth, but it was from the future rather than the past. It seemed impossible, even beyond the bounds of a science fiction film. Now the conversation is more often about when the singularity will happen. The magic number 2045, the year that Ray Kurzweil predicted that the singularity would occur, often this is used as a touchstone for the discussion. Some say it would happen before, some think much later in the century, or that it is still several centuries away. And of course, there are people who believe that it won't happen at all. But, and this is the key distinction that I want to make, there are few people today who don't think that something is going to happen, that something momentous regarding technology and artificial intelligence awaits us in the near future. Like some event in the deep past of humanity, like the building of the pyramids or the structures at Göbekli Tepe, this event, the singularity, it's also chronologically located on the human time continuum. Only it's not behind us, but it's in front of us, somewhere in the mysterious future, looming. So my point is that the conversation about the singularity these days is more about when it will happen. That it will happen has become almost generally accepted by those who think deeply about these matters. It is, any longer, only a question of when. Now, I mentioned Ray Kurzweil a moment ago. He is the one who predicted that the singularity would occur sometime around the year 2045. Sometime around then. Kurzweil is not a seer. He's not a Nostradamus of technology. He's not saying that it absolutely will happen on a certain date. He does not proclaim to see the future in the same way that a biblical prophet might. No, the man deals in probabilities, and using a metric of his own, he thinks that after that point in human history, things will begin changing so often and so drastically in terms of technological advancement and cultural change, really, that we cannot see past that point. Cannot imagine what society or the universe really will be like. Cannot see past. In other words, that year or whenever the singularity comes is like an event horizon in a black hole. We will have fallen in by then so far into the gravity of technology that we cannot see this location, this portion of history that lies ahead of us. We cannot even begin to speculate with any reasonable chance of success at being right about how our society will look. It is inside the black hole, and like the theoretical center of a black hole, which is called the singularity, the technological singularity is something that is beyond our understanding and may always be beyond our human understanding. It is possibly something that we may only be able to understand, like Ray Kurzweil recommends, we begin to augment our brains with some of the technology that will become available as the singularity approaches. Technology that is already becoming available, actually. Look up Elon Musk's Neuralink, which has already been implanted in a human brain this year in 2024, just 21 years before Ray Kurzweil's prediction. But I'm already flying high here, and you may still need to learn how to taxi this aircraft before we take off and ascend into the clouds. So let me step back a little bit. Let's learn in this episode a bit about Ray Kurzweil, who is sort of considered the grandfather of the concept of the technological singularity. Even if he's not exactly the originator of the idea, Kurzweil has probably done more to promote awareness of the singularity than anyone else and has fruitfully speculated about the progress of technology in recent years. And before we get into all that, let me make my usual plug. You can find this episode and all the others from every series that I produce on my website at western-traditions.org. There you can also find some helpful pictures and maps, some good books to read, and you can also visit the shopping page and buy some Western Traditions merchandise. There are PayPal and Patreon options to directly contribute to the support of my work as well. And now, let's talk about Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil is an American from New York City. He was born in 1948 and is now 76 years old. The matter of his age is important, and I'll get back to that in a bit. Anyway, Kurzweil was a computer nerd back before computer nerds were a thing. In the 1960s, as a teenager, he was programming computers to do things like compose music, music which he could also perform because his father was a concert pianist and he enjoyed an artistic upbringing. He studied computer science at MIT, and he went on to become a successful writer and a businessman, starting and managing several businesses over the course of his life. In 1990, he wrote a book called The Age of Intelligent Machines, and there is where the thread of Kurzweil's life that I want to talk about really begins. In this book, he opens up the topic of the significance of technological advancement, the accelerating proficiency and capability of machines. Now, instead of machines, perhaps, we would say today computers, or just use the word technology. Regardless, it all leads us to the same place and the same topic of discussion, which Kurzweil promptly summed up best in his 2005 book, The Singularity Is Near. Now, this book may or may not be the best book about the singularity, especially as it had been almost 20 years since its publication, but it has held up surprisingly well down through the years, and it's still, in my opinion, a great introduction to the topic, if you know little or nothing about the singularity. In this book, Kurzweil presents probably the most important idea with regard to this topic. That idea is the concept of exponential growth. But as a precursor to that concept, let's first address Moore's Law. Gordon Moore was a co-founder of the American tech company Intel. After considering how information technology had been advancing in recent years, in 1965, Moore predicted that a doubling of computer power would occur every 2 years for the foreseeable future. Specifically, he said that the number of transistors that could fit on an integrated circuit would double every 2 years. Now, this is not a technical podcast, and I'm not qualified to properly explain what an integrated circuit is, but let's just consider it as a synonym for computer chip. And the number of transistors refers to the microscopic circuitry on the surface of that chip. If you use computers and the internet, at this point you probably understand that the more you can fit onto such a chip, the more powerful the computer will be, faster, with more memory, able to produce more graphics, etc. Now, Moore's Law has essentially held true down through all these decades, ever since 1965. And in fact, during some periods, the doubling of power has occurred even more quickly. Ray Kurzweil jumps on this idea to demonstrate that technology in general, not just computing power, that technology advances in a similar way. And by similar, let me point out what Moore's Law, this law about doubling, really entails. Maybe you've heard of this story or some version of it. A king wishes to pay a man for his services, and the man refuses the typical requests that we make of a king: gold, jewels, power, his daughter's hand in marriage, etc. The man tells the king, quote, "All I want for you is to pay me with grains of rice, and we'll use the chessboard to calculate it." I don't remember exactly how, but somehow a chessboard figures into the story. Anyway, the man wants the king to put one grain of rice in the first square of the chessboard, and then double the quantity for every square as it advances along on the same board. The king happily agrees. I mean, a grain of rice, how big could that get, no matter how many times you multiply it, right? He gives his word to pay, thinking that he is buying the man's services cheap. Follow along with me then. On the second square of the chessboard, there would be two grains, since we are doubling with every square. The third square on the chessboard would have four grains, and by the end of the first row, the king has to pile up 128 grains of rice. Not bad. A mouthful of rice, or a little more, right? But by the end of the second row on the chessboard, the king now owes more than 32,000 grains of rice. A good bit, but a king should be able to pay with a sack of rice, right? but you can see what is happening. There are 8 rows and a total of 64 squares on a chessboard. By the last square on the board, the king owes something like several quadrillion or quintillion grains of rice, and he has to hand over his entire kingdom to the man since he has given his word to pay, and there's not enough grain or rice in the world to compensate the man. A similar thing has happened with computer chips and with computational power over the last several decades. You may have heard before that the smartphone in your hand, with which you may in fact be listening to this podcast, this phone has more computational power, much more power, than the spacecraft that traveled to the moon. Kurzweil augments this idea by declaring that technological advancement in general, not just computational power, is also occurring at such a rate, at an exponential rate, not a linear rate. It is not simply that technology is a few percentage points better, faster, 10% better every year, but that the rate of improvement, the rate itself, is growing exponentially. When you turn this into a mathematical concept, you end up with a graph that displays an upward curving line. At first, the curve of the line is barely noticeable. It almost seems flat. Then it reaches an inflection point, sometimes called an elbow, after which the line shoots upward nearly vertically toward infinity. I will include an example of such a graph on the page for this episode on my website at western-traditions.org, along with a link to Ray Kurzweil's book. Now, Carl Sagan had something to say about the power of exponential growth. "Exponentials can't go on forever," he said, "because they will gobble up everything. The numbers become more than astronomical because you can very quickly get to numbers that represent quantities that are beyond that of the total number of atoms in the universe." But this is exactly what Kurzweil posits about the progress of technology, that at some point in the future, our technological advancement will hit an inflection point and begin to climb to infinity at an unbelievable, unimaginable pace, and possibly gobble up everything. This, in essence, is the singularity, the point in history at which technology progresses so quickly that the human mind loses the capacity to really understand it. Beyond this point, which Kurzweil estimates will happen sometime around the year 2045, beyond this point, we cannot really make any predictions because we will no longer be able to imagine it. What do I mean by imagine it? Well, up until very recently, we've been able to make predictions about where technology would take us in the future. Sometimes predictions were correct, sometimes not, but it was possible to imagine something with a certain level of accuracy. For instance, you could have made predictions 10 or even 20 years ago about electric cars, about virtual reality, artificial intelligence, and so on. And you could have waited just to see how accurate you were as the years rolled by. Kurzweil, last century, famously predicted that a computer would beat a grandmaster at chess by the start of the 21st century. And this actually occurred in 1999, and he didn't even develop the computer. He was simply predicting the power of technological advancement. The inevitable power. Other predictions of Kurzweil's were not so accurate. Kurzweil predicted that wearable technology would have made much greater advances by now. We do, yes, have smartwatches and such, but his original hopes were much more ambitious than how things have actually turned out so far. But the point is not really about the accuracy of his predictions of technological progress. It's about the capacity of any of us to make the predictions at all. In other words, by the time we get to the singularity, according to Kurzweil, the human mind can no longer encompass or imagine in any way the new technologies that will develop in the future. In fact, by then, all of society will be too complex, too altered, for us today to even try to imagine. Now, I'm not going in this episode to get into whether this idea is accurate or not, whether the singularity is real or not, but I would call your attention, especially if you are middle-aged right now, and can remember the end of the last century, I call your attention to the way that society has changed in just the last 25 years. Could you have imagined it? If you and I had been sitting around in a cafe in some college town or in some bar, blue-skying about the future in 1999 when the Cold War was over and people were saying it was the end of history and the internet was still a place where you wrote emails and spent hours downloading a single song or a document, could we have imagined what society is like now? Could we have even imagined it 10 or 15 years ago? Could we have imagined everyone walking around staring at their phone all day? And is it not true that things just seem to be getting stranger and stranger every year now, at a rapidly accelerating pace? But, and don't let me get carried away supporting the concept of the singularity, the idea has its detractors even now, and it has its own hurdles to overcome, as even its biggest proponents, such as Ray Kurzweil, will admit to. For instance, we are nearing the end of the doubling of transistors, in one sense, because there's a limit to how thin the circuits can be on the surface of a chip. This can be overcome, Kurzweil would suggest, by transitioning to quantum computing, which would not be so dependent on transistor density. And that is a possibility. There are already quantum computers. Their progress has been very slow, but remember what I have already said about exponential progress in technology. It seems insignificant at first, and then suddenly it takes off. There are other reasons, though, to suspect that the singularity might not come. For instance, maybe there's a ceiling to all this. Maybe we get to a certain point and the progress simply stops. Maybe the technological chessboard is not as big as we thought, you might say, and the numbers simply stop growing. Still, let's take a chance in this episode to look at some examples that support Kurzweil's views on the singularity. Exponential growth, when you start at quantities near zero anyway, it always seems unimpressive at first. Think of that chessboard and the grains of rice. By the end of the first row, you're only at 128 grains, maybe a few spoonfuls, if that much. By the time you get to the middle of the board, though, the numbers become astounding. Kurzweil, in his book, points to some modern examples of this exponential advancement in science. For example, look at the Human Genome Project, which began mapping the human genome in 1990. In its first few years, they managed to map out something like less than 1% or 2% max of human DNA, and their efforts were kind of ridiculed. Then, as the years passed, their progress came faster and faster until 2003, only 13 years after the start, their work was already complete. Just 10 years before, the task had seemed hopeless. And look where we are now, where scientists can track down every gene you have, they can determine your relationships and your ancestry and your likelihood to suffer from a certain disease, and even as we speak, there are technologies like CRISPR for remodeling your genes. If you had told someone in 1992, let's say, when the project seemed to be moving at a snail's pace, that we would have accomplished all this by now, they probably would have laughed. I mean, we knew next to nothing about human DNA back then besides theories about our helix-shaped substratum. The internet itself is such a story of exponential growth. In the 1980s, before the World Wide Web, the internet was simply a way to transmit messages from one computer to another. Even after the start of the World Wide Web in 1992, for many years, the internet was just a wonky pastime, really, for a limited number of people that actually knew how to access it and actually owned a computer. Now, even many poor people in third world countries not only have internet access, but they even carry phones that can access it. And we even have, within our own recent lifetimes, examples of predictions that seem absolutely unbelievable, but have already turned out to be true. Consider the prediction, one of Kurzweil's predictions from the 1990s, that someday we would be able to make products out of pure information. Now, actually, if you're my age with a brain trained in the 20th century, this concept still seems absurd. You can't make something, a product. You can't make something out of simple information, right? But we actually live in an age of such products. After all, what is an app? Put Facebook in my hand, put YouTube in my hand, you can't. These are products made from pure information, and you're probably using one now to listen to my voice. Kurzweil actually is not satisfied with the idea that just computational power is advancing at an exponential rate. He goes one step further, or perhaps several steps further in his book, by declaring first that man himself has undergone change at an exponential rate. From that perspective, we are now already sort of at a singularity, really, even if technology per se is still reaching its own singularity. What do I mean by this? Well, ask yourself, if you took a man from 2,000 years ago and transported him to the present day, say you picked him up in the year AD 24 and you boarded him onto your light-speed ship and zoomed around the universe for 2,000 years while everyone on board aged just a few seconds, perhaps, and then you disembarked him here in the United States or in the country of your choice, really. What do you think that person would experience looking around? Would he or she understand anything at all? Would they go into shock at the strangeness of the technology, the weirdness of the culture? Now, we could argue about this, and truly, the singularity is a great conversational topic. If you're ever in a group of people and trying to spark up a topic, this is one that will get people thinking and arguing. But everybody would probably agree that the transported man from Roman times would definitely feel some level of amazement and confusion if he wasn't just downright stupefied. Hell, if you took yourself from 40 years ago, if you're my age, and suddenly dropped yourself into the present day, the shock would be quite real. How much more the confusion if you were from 2,000 years ago, 3,000, 5,000 years ago? It might appear like we possessed magical powers. Kurzweil goes beyond this, too. It's not just that man is developing at this exponential rate. The universe itself is actually undergoing what he calls paradigm shifts, experiencing new events, new formations of matter, etc., at an increasing rate. And the universe has been evolving and developing, and it's been doing so since the beginning, quicker and quicker. He demonstrates this with a logarithmic graph in his book, and I've also reproduced this graph on my website at western-traditions.org, so you can take a look. Now, if you don't understand logarithms and just what Kurzweil is trying to get at here, I am not the one to teach you the concept, but I hope that you will accept it as a challenge and do try to study and understand it, because when you do, this table of paradigm shifts is pretty significant. The idea is that the universe itself is undergoing these quote-unquote advances and doing so with increasingly less time between each new development. And man is just the tip of the spear in this context, you see. He's the latest developer of the paradigm shifts, perhaps the first conscious developer of these paradigm shifts, but not the last. When I elaborated on paradigm shifts in the last segment, you may have mentally paused when I said that man was the first conscious developer of these paradigm shifts in the universe. Ah, you might have said and objected, what about aliens? Now is when we dig into some of the doctrines of the singularity and of transhumanism, which I will definitely dig into more with a separate episode. But it naturally follows when thinking about the singularity that there cannot be any intelligent aliens in the universe. There cannot be any other technologically advanced civilizations anywhere in the universe. Now, singularitarians, as you might call them, they do not think this because they are blinkered and closed-minded. They're a pretty bright bunch of people. No, it's simply an unavoidable reality. If you accept, if you believe that technology advances at this exponential rate and that this inevitably results in the singularity, then if any other society had undergone the same event, their own singularity, we would be able to see this when we observe the universe. These civilizations would be moving stars around, perhaps, building huge galactic structures, maybe, and more importantly, they would be here. They would be everywhere. Now, this begins to cross the frontier into the topic of the Fermi paradox, another great conversation piece if you ever need one, and another episode for sure, but this is definitely a dogma of the singularity. Either we are the first species to achieve this, or it is not achievable, or, and this is also a separate topic, perhaps the singularity does not result in universal conquest and colonization of the galaxy, but rather something else. Maybe it's a dead end. But don't tell any singularitarian that I told you so. That's another thing about this topic. Once someone believes in the singularity, embraces the faith, so to speak, they become pretty dogmatic about it. I'm not trying to throw shade on anyone here. I find the possibility pretty convincing myself, but I'm a little more open to doubt about the matter than the devout believer. Let's just say I'm a good enough Catholic to make it to Mass periodically, and I make the sign of the cross when I need luck, but I'm not good enough to adhere fanatically to all the commandments, if you know what I mean. I'm the same way with the singularity. Sounds legit, but I'm not putting on their version of sackcloth or saying their rosary. Even though they promise immortality, just like the Christians. Yes, that's one more aspect of this theory that I should explain. Ray Kurzweil is adamant that many people alive today, maybe people listening to this podcast, not all, but many, a phrase which also reminds me a little bit about Christian salvation, but let's not digress too much. Anyway, many people alive today will never die. You see, they will live until 2045 or whenever the singularity happens to occur, and at that point, everything becomes possible, including immortality. In Catholic speak, according to singularitarians, we will achieve the glorified body, and some among us will never experience death, because the singularity will be something like the second coming of Christ, bringing with it the salvation of humanity and a new heaven and a new earth. Of course, Kurzweil may also be biased in his thinking about the singularity and his hopes for it. Let me be completely transparent with you about the man. He is presently 76 years old, and it is well known that he is trying desperately to avoid death. I believe at one time he was taking something like 250 supplements every day in an effort to reprogram his body chemistry into a reverse aging. I believe that he's now got it down to something just like 70 supplements, but regardless, the man is obviously obsessed with avoiding death in a way that most of the rest of us probably are not. And on a more touching note, it is also known that Kurzweil hopes that the singularity will allow him to resurrect his father, whom he lost when he was a young man and whom he desperately misses. You see, resurrection is another inevitable result of the hoped-for singularity. Whether it will bring with it some of the nasty stuff that also happens in the Christian apocalypse is a matter for another discussion. Now, I concluded the last segment with the statement that we would not be the last developers of these paradigm shifts. That is because, get ready for this, by that year, by 2045 or before, intelligence really becomes non-biological. Not everybody will become a cyborg in this scenario. Kurzweil posits that some people, perhaps the devoutly religious, will resist and remain in their fleshy form. He calls them Moshes, M-O-S-H, mostly original substrate humans. But for the most part, those who embrace the singularity will become, by then if not before, at least part machine, if not entirely machine. Much of Kurzweil's book discusses the possibility of uploading brains into super-advanced, highly powerful computers, which can perform computations and store memory just like a human brain, or better. And truly, even if you are recoiling at these ideas, we are getting there. Kurzweil and others have estimated just how much computational power a human brain uses, and we are getting there with our computers. The release of ChatGPT-3 in late 2022 and the present momentum in AI development in spring of 2024 should awaken you to the possibility that we may achieve human-level intelligence in a machine soon, even if we're not quite there yet. Regardless, we have a really excellent opportunity to judge and see the believability of all this. Kurzweil and others have said that in this decade, the 2020s, we will make more discoveries and learn more about the universe than we have ever learned before. That the quantity of discovery, that is, the quantity of our discoveries in just this decade alone, will equal or surpass everything that we have ever learned as a species. And all this within the next, remaining 6 years of the decade. I myself, even though I am not a dues-paying transhumanist, I have to admit that this appears possible, even likely. Consider how the James Webb Telescope, launched on Christmas Day 2021, has absolutely destroyed more than a century of thought about the origins of the universe. It's going to be an interesting time, the remainder of this decade. But I think the Chinese have a saying about interesting times, though. Now, there's a lot to be said here, and this episode does not close the topic. There are many ways to poke holes in the singularity concept, just as there are many strong supports to the concept as well. Furthermore, even if you believe, quote-unquote, in the singularity, you are not necessarily a supporter of the idea, right? You're not necessarily enthusiastic about it. I mean, this event could also mean the end of the human race. Actually, it really does mean the end. It's just that there are two ways to look at it. Either we peacefully transcend our bodies and become machines, embracing a benevolent AI, or we are wiped out by the superior robotic beings that begin to populate our world in an alternate apocalyptic scenario. Even proponents of the singularity accept this awful alternative possibility. Kurzweil himself says that we must shepherd in this new age carefully, so that it benefits us and is not a danger. In further episodes about the singularity, I will get into the different possibilities, the different routes and timing to the singularity, as well as introduce other thinkers and theorists who have contributed to the topic. In the meantime, I thank you for listening to the Western Traditions Podcast.